Now on RadioVegas.rocks, it's time for the Oscar, Bernie, and Ernie History of Comedy Show. They know a lot, because they were there to live it. Now, give it up for your hosts of the show that is making history, Oscar, Bernie, and Ernie.
Howdy, 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 happy new year. How's everybody doing out there? Thank you for tuning in. Hey, we got an interesting interview this evening. We're going to interview the producer of the show. Jay Bird's been around the block so many times. He's got a few stories for us tonight, and I'm looking forward to hearing them. I know that, Jay, you're originally from Idaho, is where you were born, correct?
Correct.
And you came to Vegas how many years ago?
It'll be 17 years in July of this year.
Wow, that's a long time now. I think it's been at least, what, 7 or 8 years ago I met you when you were at the Union Plaza. It's been that long, or maybe not quite that long?
6 years at least.
6 years at least, yeah.
It's been a living hell ever since.
Yeah, but I'll tell you something, though. What was really nice about it, when I got on stage, when I first met you, you said, well, get up there and do 20 minutes. I mean, when you go into a place and you get some stage time, it's always like 5 minutes, you know, 3 minutes, and then get the hell out of here. But I was able to get up there and felt very comfortable and had some really nice crowds down there and stuff.
Well, I've always been a fan of the quasi-celebrity.
Nah, yeah, the bird. The bird's the word. That's the thing. That's what got me on your stage. Yeah.
Right. He's more famous than you.
I know.
I don't know how that works, but he's more famous than you.
No, it's true. He's got that face. He's just got that lovable face. No, this is great tonight. It's a brand new year, and what'd you do for the new year?
I hosted a top 50 best of classic rock countdown with Tom Seaborn right here on Radio Vegas.
Wow, very interesting. And that was for how many hours you do that?
It went 5.5 hours.
Holy moly.
Yeah, he picked 25, I picked 25. They were our favorites, and we just counted them down.
Wow, that's neat.
And I got really drunk because our friend Alan Childs, who has a show here on Radio Vegas, the last show of the year for rock and comedy, he gave us a $180 bottle of champagne and told us not to open it until New Year's.
Whoa. And, now, how'd that taste?
Like $180.
Really? That's good. That's good. Now, the best wine I ever had once was some Rothschild 68, and I couldn't believe it because my buddy, he used to live in a little bungalow house, and his wife pulled it out of the basement. It's like, how the hell you got a $1,000 bottle of wine sitting in your basement in this little bungalow outside of Cleveland? But to be honest with you, the best tasting wine I ever had was always somebody's homemade wine. You know, somebody in a basement kick up a bottle. And have you watched the process? Have you ever seen that done?
No, I'm not a big wine guy.
Right. Well, it's almost like a sparkless bottle, and they stick this gizmo on top of it and throw the water in there and a fruit, and I don't know, 60 days later, they're getting drunk. So, what was the name of the champagne? Do you remember it, or was it a blur?
It was a French champagne and was written in French.
Wow.
So I have no idea what it was.
Wow, yeah.
I think it translated to really delicious.
Ah, that's excellent. That's funny. And especially after you fuzz a buzz, if it's in French, you know, who cares? You know what I mean?
I think I was speaking French.
Yeah, by that time the night was over. Definitely.
Yeah, it was good.
All right, so what's the next comedy show you're going to go hang out at? Or, you know, you're always going to different shows here in town. You know a lot of comics.
I'm heading out this week to the new comedy room that used to be Sin City Comedy, but now as of January, it's, I forget the name of it offhand, but
Planet Hollywood, right?
It's a Planet Hollywood. What is it? Girls and comedy, or
Dolls and
Comedy, or
yeah, something like that.
Yeah, John Stinger, who's a frequent guest on the show, he's doing an hour, and I've never seen him do an hour. So
nice.
Yeah, so he invited me out to that.
Very nice. That's excellent. Now, is he going to do one night or a whole week, or how's that place work?
He's performing with Jocelyn Sharp.
Oh, she's great. She's a wonderful human being, but, I mean, really, really funny. First time I saw her was, like, one of the open mics. Might have been Donnie Johnson's over there at Boomers, and she just cracked you up.
She's gotten really good over the years, and I've seen her do it. So,
you know, the guys that stick with it, that happens. You know, I mean, that's the one thing about comedy. It's repetition.
So now we know what's happened to you.
Yeah. It took me 40 years to write the act, and now I can't even remember the damn stuff. But I'm ready. I'm really ready.
It took you 40 years to write the act, and all your jokes are now outdated.
I know. It's all about Richard Nixon. I'm trying to be topical, and I'm keeping up with Rich Little. You know? No, that's funny. But, you know, right now, for me, the next thing coming up is America's Got Talent. And I'm going to do it seriously. Because everything I've done in the past has always been like a spoof or with Bernie. But I'm going to do just straight stand-up this next time I go over there. And give it the 90 seconds.
No, you should take the bird.
No, I'll take the bird, but I'm not going to do the bird. Now, if I get past round one and they want to see something different, then I might have to break out Bernie, you know. But it'll be interesting because the last time it was just so antagonistic with Pierce.
I would like to see Bernie just go out by himself.
By himself. Put a screen up in front of me like that guy that was at Naked Pizza. You weren't there a couple of weeks ago, but there was a guy who put up a nice screen. It was like we had nice drapes behind us. And over there to have, you know, a little plush drapery was really a step up. That was pretty neat. It was like, what the hell happened in here? We got drapes all of a sudden? And that one fella, I didn't see his act because I went next door to get a beer. And by the time I got back, he was done. And, I mean, the service is fast in a bar. I mean, but I guess the guy only did 90 seconds himself. I don't know. And he has some kind of a doll there. Did you hear about him at all? Oh, okay. Well, anyways, I don't know. Bernie thought he had competition that night. I don't know what the hell happened. But it's fun over there. Naked Pizza. That's Wednesday night.
It is.
And you put that together.
I did. It's a rocking comedy show event.
Yeah. We don't see you there as much as I'd like to see it all
lately.
Well,
it's because Bobby's there, and I don't want to take the spotlight off of Bobby.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Yeah. Bring him under your wing, as Bernie is saying. Mentor him along a bit.
He's turned it around, and he's done.
Oh, yeah.
He's done a lot with it.
Yes, so. He has, and he's got a great sound system. You know, it's funny because there and Coffee Tea or me over there on Sahara, that's another small little place. But, I mean, it gets a really rocking little crowd in there, and I've seen the same thing over at Naked Pizza. I mean, you go in there, and you see some good comedy, and guys are trying out some stuff. But, I mean, you know, one night I feel like I'm on top of the world, and you go in there and try something else a little bit, and you go, I got to tweak this and tweak that, and you're not patting yourself on the back so much, which is good because it makes you get out there and write some more and go and do it again.
Right.
You know, that's the whole, that's and the camaraderie of it all, the networking, this is the big thing for me. Who's your favorite comic?
Of all times?
Yeah, of all times, besides Bernie.
It'd be Sam Kinison.
Oh, okay. Really? Wow. You know, I mean, it's funny how he took a premise of, like, screaming and just turned it into a fine art. I mean, the guys, and I'll tell you, it's funny you say that about Sam, because I was thinking about him earlier today, and it was just really neat. I mean, the couple of minutes, my career, as you well know, I'm not living in a 10,000 square foot house, you know, I'm not Terry Fader, but I've had such a great life meeting such wonderful people over the years.
Same with me.
And I had shared laughs with them, and that's, I don't know, when you meet somebody on a personal level and, you know, Sam Kinison was a star when I met him, and I'm parking cars at the Sands. And just a couple of minutes we talked, and to see him laugh and look at me, you know, and I'm having a chance to talk to him, man to man, comic to comic, you know, as it was just a thrill. I mean, it's something they never take away. Because they're, you know, most of the comics are 100% behind you, but there's a few bad apples out there, and they don't want to jump you for any little thing or whatever. I don't know. It basically goes back to their own insecurity and their own personality is what it is. And I talked to enough shrinks after the second wife, so I learned a little bit.
I got to see him in concert twice. Never got to meet him.
Wow.
Always wanted to interview him.
Wow. You saw him live twice.
Yeah.
In L.A.?
Yeah.
Wow. Now, is it a club you were working at, or?
No, just went as
went
a fan.
To Sam.
Yeah, I was, what was I, 18, I think, when he died? Yeah, I was just.
Wow, I was 38.
I was just fresh out of high school when he got killed.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it went too soon. And I would say that nobody else, I mean, you never saw anybody screaming at an audience the way he did, and I don't think anybody ever could, you know?
I mean, it was beautiful.
We rant a little bit, but, I mean, he was just amazing. And some of the things he said as far as religion went, it was like, he wasn't, I'd take a religious guy, but he was a very spiritual man the things that he said, just the way he said it.
I think he was a religious man when he started,
uh-huh.
And I think he just progressed into what he became. Because, I mean, he grew up that, you know, his dad
right.
being a Pentecostal preacher.
Right. At
he
that point, yeah.
He was a Pentecostal
yes,
preacher.
Right.
And I think then it was. But I think as his career progressed,
right.
I think he put that all on hold.
Right. Yeah, because the religion, you know, that's going into a building. And if you got it in your heart, you know, whatever it is, that those good thoughts you got, that's a heck of a temple. I mean, just the way, I don't know if you knew the story about, I think it was Carla Boa that was there at the accident. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
I mean, that was weird. I mean, you know, say Sam's talking to an angel and...
Well, they said that Sam actually got up and walked over to the car that hit him to find out if he was okay.
Wow.
And they said doing that...
Oh, my God. I said, what an act of...
They said doing that was what caused him more injury because he, you know, if he would
concerned just, about other.
But if he would have just laid there right. and waited for the ambulance, he might have survived it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, it's weird. I just saw something on Facebook today and posted it on heart attacks. And it says, I mean, I'm 63. So
I'm going to stop you, John, because you're very famous for saying, and then he died. And no. That's how all your stories end. And
I'm not talking about myself.
I don't want then he died.
But it said, keep aspirin by the bed. You know, it's, what are you going to do? You know, time's up. It's been a fun ride.
Yep.
You know, it's been a great ride. I mean, being able to meet, all right, who have you met? Because you worked some clubs in L.A. I mean, you were working inside, I mean, actually as a greeter or something, weren't you?
The first physical well-known comic that I met, I was doing some intern work at the Brea Improv when I was going to college. And I got in there. I said, look, I'll do whatever. I want to hang out here. I want to, you know, I just want access to your green room. I want to interview.
Your passion.
I want to interview the comics.
Wow.
Always had a thing for stand-up. I never wanted to do it, but I was always enthralled.
Right,
A&E used to have Evening at the Improv.
Right.
I watched it religiously.
Right.
I turned 18. My parents were like, what do you want for your birthday? I go, I want to go to the Improv.
Nice.
You know, that's what I wanted to do. So when I went to college and I started just, you know, I wanted interviews and stuff like that. I went to the Improv because it was close to the college and said, I you know, think of it as an intern or whatever. Just give me access to your green room. I want to interview the comics that come in. So the first actual well-known comic that I interviewed was Steve McGrew. And McGrew and I are still friends.
Nice.
And, that was...
Wasn't he at the South Point?
That was 94. He does a Laugh Factory. He was just recently at Brad Garrett's.
I think at the South Point.
He will do the Dirty at 12:30.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought I met him with you there once before,
if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, very good.
Yeah,
that's
so
cool.
He was the first well-known comic that I ever interviewed. And then, I mean, the list is endless. I mean, Pablo Francisco. Craig Shoemaker. I mean, there was tons. They would just come in and...
And there's a lot of working comics. I mean, P.J. Maguire, I mean, he's a funny dude, man.
They're great.
You know, I met him here doing your show and he appreciates a good cigar. It was really a pleasure meeting him, too.
He does, yeah. So I hung out at the Improv, and I got to eventually the sound guy, you know, started letting me set up the mics. He taught me the soundboard and this and that. And then there was one night that the sound guy wasn't going to make it in, and they're like, Bird, you're up. And that was the first night I ran the show. There was even one night that the opening MC didn't show up, and they said, you have to open the show. And
What is snow in L.A.? What the hell happened to these guys?
And I said, well, that no, but it wasn't L.A. Like, this was Orange County. But, they said, you know, he's not going to make it in. I think it was car trouble or whatever. So you got to go up. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going up. There's just no way. And they're like, come on, this is 5-10 minutes. Let's get the show going. Nope, I don't want to go. And they said, you're going up. And so I went up and did 5 minutes. Never done it before, ever. Never had a desire, never wanted to. And I remember the first thing I said was, I know you guys are expecting me to be funny, but I'm not. And they laughed. And so that was my 5 minutes of stand-up, and I will never, ever do it again.
Yeah, well, that's the twist on it. You're supposed to be funny. You're saying you're not, and that was the twist, and that's why they left.
And I go, seriously, if you guys look at if you guys look back there in 7 minutes, I'm the sound guy.
But I didn't know we're laughing at that.
Yeah, and I respect stand-up so much, I just don't do it, but I respect it so much, and I love the road stories, and it's not anything I've done with the Rockin' Comedy Show. We used to hang out at TGI Fridays when they were done performing, and we would go over there, and these guys would tell stories. I mean, it was like...
That is so much fun. When the comics are holding court.
You know, Bobby Slayton and all, he's just going back and telling stories.
Oh, it's wonderful.
And so even when I developed the Rockin' Comedy Show, I'm like, when I have these guys come on, that's what I want to know.
Right, that's how that feel.
People can find out when you started your career. I don't really care. I like to know what the first job was you ever had. why you started doing stand-up, you know, and that stuff. That's what I like.
Well, the beauty of what you did to go through that terror of that 5 minutes or three or four, whatever it was, the first time they did that to you, it gave you a real respect for what those guys you had been watching do.
Oh, absolutely.
Because a lot of people think it's easy. And it only gets easy if you go up there and you bomb a few times and figure out what the hell you're doing. And
I can honestly say I've never been one of those guys that say it's easy.
Well, that's true, too. You know what I mean? But that's the only way it'll ever get easy. And the thing about it is, and when I say easy, is that you're not so frozen that you can't make that step, you know, because you know you got to make the step because you got to do it. You got to take the risk to have that rush, basically, is what it is. I mean, it's amazing. When people start laughing at stuff that you created, it's a lot of fun. It really is a blast. And funny money. Now, what I was going to ask you was, you mentioned Evening at the Improv. That was a heck of a show. And a guy that I met years ago who worked here in town was James Thomas Oregon. God bless him, he's gone. And Bobby Duck.
And then he died. See, folks?
Oh, my gosh. So, anyways.
John and I hung out in his cabin that he's got. And we're sitting around a fire, and he's talking about all these greats. And he goes, he's not with us anymore. And then he died.
And my cat's looking around going, yep, and I'm going to get the mouse, too. But did you ever go to the tapings of any of those shows?
I didn't. I was too young.
Oh.
I was too young. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
When I did finally go to the Hollywood Improv where they filmed it, I couldn't believe how small it was because on TV it was enormous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
no, you're absolutely right. Because that's where they did Last Comic Standing when they filmed this over there.
Yeah,
the place is so small. I jumped from where they had me performing down to their stage and threw my car on their desk.
But that's typical of anything. Like, I'm a huge fan of Conan O'Brien, and I finally got to go to a taping of Conan when he moved to TBS. And I went in there, and I'm like, really? Is that small? Like, literally, the band's right next to the desk.
Right.
On TV, it looks like they're way over there.
The cameras, the way the panning and all. Right.
So, yeah, it was, but yeah, it's cool. I love it. I love doing it. And the people I've met, I mean, it's just unbelievable, you know? People don't really know, because I do the rock and comedy show, nobody interviews me.
Right,
so
right.
I don't sit there and go, well, you know, back in the time when I interviewed, because to me, that just sounds like I'm bragging.
Right.
But I think, you know, if a lot of these young comics that are out here actually said, hey, Jay, let's go grab a drink and let's talk about, you know, I think they'd be blown away.
Right.
Because when I book these guys for the radio show and they come on, they're like, well, how do you know him? I'm like, I didn't meet him yesterday.
He just fell off the turn-up truck and he was on the side of the road to pick you up.
Yeah, and I mean, I've got that reputation.
You paid your dues, dude. Man, you've been around a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I've done radio 27 years.
What year did you graduate from high school?
92.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I went to college probably that summer, like right after that summer. I hopped right in.
What were you going to college for? I mean, what
radio.
Were you looking at? Oh, really? You knew your passion from the get-go.
And that's all because of Dr. Demento,
Oh, wow, yeah. His shows were great. What was it, Saturday Nights or something when I was young? I mean, I'm 63,
well,
but back
John,
in the day.
Did
he die?
No, he's alive.
Knock
and
on
well.
Wood.
He's alive and well. He releases new shows every Saturday at drdemento.com. It was 1989. My parents bought me Christmas. My parents bought me my first real stereo system. I mean, the whole deal, the record player, the tape deck, and, you know, the radio.
Oh, yeah,
CDs hadn't come out yet. That was a few years later. And, so I just in my room, just twisting the dial. And, I honestly, the only novelty, like comedy act I'd ever heard, like, music-wise, was Weird Al. Like, that was it.
Right.
And my parents' fault, because my mom bought me Weird Al's in 3D for Christmas.
Oh, wow.
Years prior. And I didn't really know who he was. Just Eat It, because that was the album that Eat It
was
on.
Yeah.
And that was it. And so then I was just going through the dial, and he was playing this song, and I was like, what the hell is this? And then another song, and I was like, what the hell is this? And I was hooked. I was like, I had never heard anything that this guy was playing. And I actually tracked down, because he has playlists of everything that he's ever done, of every show. And I tracked down literally the first show that I ever listened to, and it was January of 1989. It was the Funny 25, so it was the 25 wow. best songs ever, and I'd never heard wow. them. And literally the first song that he played that I actually remember, the artist's name is Ogden, it's Bill Frenzer, the group is Ogden Etzel, and the song is called Dead Puppies. And
you told me
to pick some songs. So this is actually Dead Puppies. This is the first song I ever heard Dr. Demento play.
Before you played it, I was just going to ask you a quick question. Did you hear Weird Al on Dr. Demento, or is that something otherwise from that? I mean, did he play that kind of music too?
You're jumping ahead.
What?
You're jumping ahead.
Oh.
This is the first song I ever heard on Dr. Demento.
Okay. Play it, Sam.
Here it is. Da-na-da-na-da-da. Here it is.
Dead puppies. Dead puppies aren't much fun. They don't come when you call. They don't chase squirrels at all. Dead puppies aren't much fun. My puppy died late last fall. He's still rotting in the hall. Dead puppies aren't much fun. No, no, no. Mom says puppy's days are through. She's going to throw him in the stew. Dead puppies aren't much fun. Dead puppies, dead, 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 dead. Out there, sing along, okay? Dead, 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 dead puppies. Dead, 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 dead puppies. Dead puppies aren't much fun. One more time for Roman Reska.
So that is the very first song I ever remember Dr. Demento playing.
I just saw your dogs run out the room, too.
And, oh, they're used to that song by now. that was it. I was hooked. I had always felt like the odd man out in high school. So I think I just adapted to the weird stuff that I know my friends didn't listen to. They didn't enjoy.
Right.
I discovered that
right.
and came back from Christmas break, you know, or whatever, and I had friends going, so what'd you do? And I go, I was listening to this show the other night, and my buddy Chuck was like, oh, that's Dr. Demento. I still didn't know anything about it, and he goes, oh, that's Dr. Demento. He's on every Sunday night at 8, and every night for years, John, I was home. It didn't matter what I was doing. My parents knew I was going to be home by 8 o'clock
right,
on Sunday. I'd run into my room. I'd just let it go. And I loved it. I was hooked. I was addicted. Like,
that's fantastic.
Amazing. And so that was where later I would listen to the show and I realized that he was giving out a lot of information about a lot of these bands. And I started not just recording the funny songs that were great. Right. I started recording the whole show.
No, is that where I was asking? Is that where you heard Weird Al the first time?
No, I heard Weird Al because of Eat It and MTV and all that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And
my parents
got me the record. Now, with Weird Al, 2 years into listening to Dr. Demento, he releases his even worse album, which has the Fat parody on it. And he was doing an in-studio interview on the show. And so he was taking questions, and I called in. That was the first physical time I'd ever spoke to him.
Nice.
And I didn't even know I was going to talk to him. I just blah, blah, blah. And they said, hang on a minute. And they put Al on. And I was like, this isn't Weird Al. And he's like, well, then who is it? You know, and it was amazing. So,
wow. How old were you?
Oh, God. I was 16, 17.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Something like that happens to you when you're young like that. It's like really
To this day, out of everybody I've interviewed, Al is still the guy that I will call and set up with his management team and his record company,
right.
Even though I know how to get a hold of him directly.
Right.
And he's like, I've told you how to get a hold of me. And I'm like, just like you, Al.
Right.
You ask people for permission even though you don't have to.
Right.
He's the one.
That's
art,
respect.
He's
for
the
sure.
one artist that I have that much respect.
Well, yeah,
for.
Yeah, and then
that
works.
I will not physically right. get a hold of him personally right. and go, hey, would you do this? I know he will.
Right.
But I want that.
Right.
Professionally, and I think he kind of respects.
Yeah,
it
yeah, for bit. Sure, for sure. Well, you do this as a business, see, and a lot of people, you know, they run around thinking, oh, you do this, do that, and they don't realize, you know what I mean. And the thing of it is, too, it's just a body of your work. How many shows have you done?
Rockin' Comedy Show, I've done 839.
I mean, that is awesome. That is
I've done
amazing.
More than that, right. if you include the Crazy J show that I did for years,
right.
the show that I do on Sunday.
Right.
I've clocked over, we've figured it out, we've clocked over about 2,100 hours of interviews.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I mean, the world record.
Wow.
You know, I love it. But see, the thing is it goes back. It will always go back to Dr. Demento. Every interview I ever do, they go, why did he do this? I say, Dr. Demento.
Right on.
I don't know at that moment when it clicked.
Right.
But I'm like, this is what I want to do.
That's wonderful. For me, it was seeing Freddie Prinze on stage.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, I was enamored with George Carlin, seeing him in college. But when I moved out to Vegas and saw the way Freddie Prinze worked that New Year's Eve in front of Shirley MacLaine at Caesar's Palace, we were both the same age, and I was just in awe of what he was doing. I could relate to him being his age and everything, you know? I mean, I'm looking at the guy going, look at what he's doing. He's tremendous. He's only 21 years old, and he's up there, and he's rocking the room.
Right.
But it was a lot of fun. Hey, I got to do a couple messages here for the Oscar and Bernie with Ernie, History of Comedy Hour. My buddy Ernie, he's over there at Amnesia Salon, which is on Losi Road. Over there at 6462 Losi Road, which is right around the corner there from Cheyenne. Yeah, Cheyenne. The next exit's Craig. Yeah, he's by Cheyenne over there. So give Ernie a call, 702-227-3322. And Ernie over there at Amnesia, they do all kinds of stuff. Manzillions, Brazilians. They even got a chiropractor over there to bend you back into shape. So go on over there, see Ernie at Amnesia Salon, and come out looking beautiful. You'll be saying, hey, forget about it. I look great when I come out of Amnesia Salon. So anyways, I want to mention that, and I want to also mention our sponsor, A Tax Service and More, over on 3140 Durango, South Durango, DI and Durango. They're in the professional plaza there with the green roof. It's right there. You spot it from the road. Go on in, say hi to Tax Service and More. Get your taxes done, licensed and bonded. And we got a CPA back in Ohio that backs a business. It owns a business, Michael Mayer. I've known him since junior high. And my other buddy is Dick Talks over at Peach Wheatgrass. I think we're going to get the Dickster back here next week. See what he's been up to. Anyways, Pete's Wheatgrass. They're on Facebook. They're also got their own website, and it's at Whole Foods here in town, and also at the Las Vegas Athletic Clubs. So you can give them a call over there, Pete's Wheatgrass, 702-240-9091. It's grown locally fresh, and it's the most oxygenated liquid that you can drink. And the last thing I'd like to mention while we do this little blurb on different people that are backers and friends of the show is Mikey Slyman over at Easy Bay All Bonds. Get a hold of Mikey, 702-445-0866. 666. If you got to get your crazy uncle out of jail, give Mikey over at Easy Bail Bonds a call. All right, I think that's about it for right now. I want to get back to talking to Jay here. He's had one heck of an interesting life. I've appreciated this man because from doing stand-up comedy from the get-go, he's helped people out. You were over at the Underworld and... let's see, the Union Plaza. Boy, we bounced around all over.
Oh, Babes.
That, yeah, I was going to say, the strip club, that was a nice little joint over there, but they went out of business, I think, didn't
they? Yeah, they did some shady stuff.
Oh, shit. And they didn't call it tax service some more. They would have saved their dumb asses.
Yeah.
All right, so anyways, Jay, how the hell did you get the name Crazy Jay?
Well, again, Dr. Demento.
Really?
This all starts because of the man in the top hat.
No kidding. He called you Crazy Jay?
He did.
Wow. What an honor.
He played a particular song, which I'll play for you. And when I was 17, it was one of the funniest songs I'd ever heard. And I requested this song, which I thought was only like 5 or 6 times. But he wasn't playing it. And I would call every week. And I'd be like, I want to hear... She Grabbed My Coconuts by Barry and the Bookbinders. And these guys, they would write it down, and they wouldn't play it. Now, I told you I tracked down the original time that I started listening, and I got the playlist, and he played it on that the week after. So now I was hooked. I was listening every week. So the following week, he played this song, and it was the first time I heard it. And I cracked up. I thought it was a funny thing because I figured out what they were singing about. Yeah. And I'm like, that's really funny. And I requested it. I really thought, up until I researched, I think last year I did, on my Sunday show, I did the playlist of that year that I started listening to Dr. Demento. And so I did it. And I literally requested that song every week for like 2.5 months. I did not realize it, right? So I drove... Apparently, I drove this man crazy. But the simple answer would be, just play it, all right? And I'll record it, and I'll have it, and I'll never bother you again. When he finally played it, he said, this is going out to somebody I'm going to call Crazy Jay, who would have to be crazy enough to request the song as many times as he did. So the name was born. I got my moniker. Now he knew who I was. And I was like, yes, awesome. And he played the song. Nope. And this is the song.
Oh, before you play. Oh, again.
You always do that.
I got a question for you. I'm interviewing you, damn it. I got to get an answer here. If I can remember what the hell it was. Oh, he archived all his shows?
Playlists.
Oh, his playlist.
Yeah, there are some shows that are archived. I still have probably 200 cassettes of his show.
That you personally recorded?
That I personally recorded.
Holy shit, Jay.
I still have the cassette where he actually said that.
Wow. I saved a cassette if I could find it. Now, I don't know where the hell I have
these cassettes. I have boxes. And years ago, my mom was like, why don't you just throw some of this stuff out? I'm like, never.
Oh, never, never, never.
Never, never.
I had George Carlin saying he was going to do the TV show with me here in town on tape on my phone machine. So I saved that sucker, you know. I mean, here's George Carlin. My friends go, Jesus, Johnny, you got George Carlin on your phone machine. But the interesting thing is, do you think he archived the shows back in the day? Did he save them?
He did because he was syndicated.
Wow.
So he was sending them out. And for Christmas one year... And wow. again, this is a bump, but we should play a song and then come back and I'll tell you.
All right. Okay. That's
so
great.
This is the song that got me the name.
A name? Oh, a name.
This is She Grabbed My Coconuts by Barry and the Bookbinders.
She grabbed my coconuts and then she ran away. She grabbed my coconuts and did a divorce. Oh, why? Tell me why. Did she want to see a grown man cry? She grabbed my coconuts and then she ran away. Thought I was alone. She came out of nowhere. I asked if I could show her the coconut I'd grown. High up in the tree, blowing on my big flute. She was staring at my fruit. I swim when suddenly she grabbed my coconuts and then she ran away. She grabbed my coconuts.
from the sand, did I give a fish? Oh, why? Tell me why? Cause she wants to see a grown man cry. She grabbed my coconut and then she ran away. Heavy began to round. I had them since I was a baby. To the horrible lady, knocked them all around. Maybe she had plans to drink the milk inside them. It was impossible to hide them from a deadly hand. She grabbed my coconut and then she ran away. She grabbed my coconut and didn't even say, oh why? Tell me why? Did she want to see a grown man cry? She grabbed my coconut and then she ran away. She attacked them, tried to crack them, really watch them into a coconut souffle. And then she ran, she ran away. It is such a shame, I never got to utilize them. Ever since she brutalized them, they've never been the same. I'm a broken man, nothing in my coconut sack. She brewed my banana, it was turning black. Getting gushy in my hands. She grabbed my coconut and then she ran away. She grabbed my coconut and didn't even say, oh why? Tell me why? Did she want to see a grown man cry? She grabbed my coconut and then she ran away.
Everybody,
she grabbed my coconut and then she ran away. She grabbed my coconut and didn't even say, oh why? Tell me why? Did she want to see a grown man cry? She grabbed my coconut and then she ran away.
Then she ran away.
Ouch, ouch, ouch. I needed someone to grab my coconuts and run with them. That's for damn sure. That could hurt.
So, yeah, that was the song that gave me the name. The guys that used to answer the phone, Whimsical Will and Good Time Gil and Musical Mike.
Wow.
They all got to know me.
Right.
They would put me right through, make right a request, on. Write it down. And then one night, Demento was given a... He had a contest because there was a movie that came out that he narrated. It was this B movie that a college student made, and Tony Curtis is in it and everything.
Oh, wow.
And it's called Lobster Man from Mars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so Dr. Demento's the narrator, so they were going to have a midnight showing in L.A., and I wanted to go. So I tried. And so Whimsical Will was like, hey, if you want to go, yeah, you know, we'll give you tickets. So I got to go, and I was excited, but I wasn't driving yet. I didn't have a license or anything. So my dad was going to have to take me. And so I don't know how thrilled he was at the time, but for me, I'm meeting Dr. Demento for the very first time. And so we're sitting in this little diner because we got there a little early, and all of a sudden I see Dr. Demento walking down the side. He's in his top hat and his
he's
his
just tux. Walking by.
Yeah, because he's going to the theater. So he's just walking, and I go, hey, there he is. Hey, how about that? And we went, and they had this section roped off to the winners, and we were going to get to sit next to Demento and all this, and he was there to meet everybody. And I'm certainly not starstruck now, but then.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then, because this guy to me, and even today,
yeah,
is bigger to me than
yeah.
Howard Stern,
right, right, right.
Any radio
no,
guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even, Dr. Demento, he was the cutting edge, the beginning.
For me, it was the beginning.
Yeah,
it,
he was.
I didn't know anybody else. I've never met anybody famous. It was, this was the guy.
Right,
I was,
right.
I was... Every Sunday, I was listening to
right,
this guy.
Right, right, right.
This is the guy that gave me the name. And,
so what did he do? Kicking the shin?
No, I went into the theater, and it breaks. Could not do it. I could not meet him. I was
too intimidated,
starstruck. I was like, this is the dude. And my dad actually turned to me and said, I did not drive you all the way here at midnight for you not to go say hello. And I So my dad literally physically almost kicked me in the butt.
That's good. He did, and you met him.
And said, go up there. And so I went up there. He said, you know, hey, Dr. Demento, it's me, Crazy Jay. He goes, oh, how nice to meet you. And we talked for like 10 minutes.
Well, you sounded like him when you just said that.
I can do a Demento impression. He doesn't really like it.
Are you kidding me?
So we talked, and then the movie started, and I sat next to him the whole time during the movie, and years of that, I got to go and eventually answer phones on the show once in a while. I told him I was going to go to college and do this for a living. He told me what classes I should take, and he said,
"Nice."
Said, I'm going to tell you up front that it's a very competitive career. You have to be very persistent, but I know that you are persistent.
Never quit, like Burns told me.
And he says, I know that with your persistence, you'll be fine. And we did that, and there were a couple times that he would tell me, hey.
He mentored you, bro.
No, I know he did.
That's cool.
This is what I'm explaining to you. He would physically call me and say, Rhino Records is having a record sale this weekend. Wow. And records as low as a nickel. You know, I'll be there if you want to go. So I would physically, I drove to Santa Monica to get down to Rhino Records. And this was, I did this two or three times with the man.
Nice.
But the first time we went, I was walking through the row. I mean, it was rows and rows and rows of old vinyl. And this is where I got my love to vinyl and started collecting comedy. Because he was like, you're going to need this. You're going to need this. And I'm like, and I'm thinking, like, I don't have Dr. Demento money. So I don't know what he's buying.
Right.
And I literally had four stacks. I mean, like, really high, right, of records. And we rang it up, and they're like, that'll be $31. And I'm like, this is insane. And I took them home, and I still have most of them.
Wow.
And we went out to lunch a few times.
Wow.
We did the thing. And then,
how old the man is he now today, Jay?
He's in his 70s. Yeah. And,
wow.
And I mean, it's just... It's,
what
it's,
year did he start?
Oh, yeah, he started way back in the day.
I remember young. I mean, I would catch him every once in a while, but I mean, I would notice him and hear him, but it wasn't like I went on my way to go listen to him.
He was like a roadie for bands, and he did this, and,
wow,
then, and then he would occasionally go on the air and play some funny records, and that was
nice.
And then eventually they...
Yeah, he found his niche. He grew in.
When are you going to play more? And then he just started playing it, and then they asked him if he was demented. And,
right,
you know,
and that's where come up with.
And he's released albums
and
all kinds of stuff. Yeah, and I just fell into it accidentally.
Wow, when's the last time you talked to him?
Sad to say, Barry and I aren't as close as people would think. Not from my doing,
right,
but he told me about a year and a half ago,
uh-huh,
that I'm supposed to take this as a compliment. And not personal,
right,
but he considers me competition because all of his listeners are now 100% online,
right,
as my listeners have always been online.
Right.
And so he considers me competition.
Wow.
And I responded with that saying, I've never thought of you as competition. I've thought of you as my mentor.
Right.
You're the reason I do what I do. Every time I do the Crazy Jay Show on Sunday mornings and play 2 hours of funny records, it's because of you.
Right.
Every time, it doesn't matter how many times I've heard She Grabbed My Coconuts.
Right.
Every time I play it, I remember the first time I heard it.
Right.
I remember where I was. I just, that's it. That was the song. That changed everything. And then he acknowledged it and called me Crazy Jay. That was it.
Now, did you hear that song on his show first?
I did.
And then you kept asking for it, and they wouldn't play.
They wouldn't play.
They said, it's
finally,
too crazy.
Finally, he came.
That's so funny.
But, you know, things were great. I got to meet the guys from Barry and the Bookbinders. Barry Bookbinder himself is actually an entertainment lawyer in L.A.
Oh, wow.
So he's done my show several times.
Oh,
usually
wow.
Live shows in L.A. He'd come out and do a few songs.
Nice.
Bill Frenzer that sang Dead Puppies. Him and I have a great relationship. I've interviewed him. I've even got to sing Dead Puppies with him.
Wow.
I've met amazing people.
Right.
Barnes and Barnes, the guys that do Fish Heads, all these guys I've got to interview because.
Wonderful, following your passion.
Because of that show.
That's great.
And he's still, like, with Weird Al. I've established a friendship because of that. Weird Al was here for a week with his last tour at Planet Hollywood and did a press release, and I went. He didn't see me walk up. But then when he's like, who do I make this out to? I was like, Crazy Chan. He's like, holy crap. You know, it was cool.
Nice.
And that's the thing. I don't hound them. I don't.
Yeah, you're not the paparazzi of the internet. Yeah. I've seen guys with microphones jumping up in people's faces. That's the thing. It's crazy.
I don't take a lot of pictures because I figure I have five pictures of me and Weird Al.
Right.
I don't need any more.
I got a picture of me and George Carlin on TV. Everybody else can kiss my ass. I was 26 years old. And that was my pinnacle of life.
Yeah. And I figured I've met them. I don't need a picture every time they come in. To me, like, I went and had dinner with somebody. I'm gonna hang out and have dinner. Right. I don't want to, like, hey, can we get a picture? It's so cheesy to me. And there's so many people that I go to in town here.
Right.
Everywhere we go. They take pictures.
I'm like that, though. I'm a promoter, you know.
These are people in the industry who go to every other holiday party. Every other holiday party, it's the same freaking people every day.
Yeah.
And they're like, can I get a picture? Right. You took a picture of him yesterday.
Right. I see what you're saying.
Because
I like to get pictures of the guys at the club, like at Naked City Pizza and stuff like
if
that.
If I go 10 years.
For Facebook.
Not even from Facebook. Put an old picture up.
Right.
If it's 2 months, you haven't changed that much in 2 months.
Right.
Just put a picture up.
Right.
If I go 10 years and I don't see Weird Al, then I'll be like, hey, can we get a picture?
I lost a few hairs.
It's a little different.
right.
And that's just basically, you know, how I feel. I just don't hound him. If I see him sitting in a restaurant eating dinner, I don't go up to him.
Right.
They're not there for that.
Exactly.
But some people don't care.
You can't. You got to leave people alone, especially when they're eating, you know. But when they get up to walk to the bathroom, I'm going to say something.
Right. But you did ask about Weird Al, and I said, you know, that came later.
Uh-huh.
I'm a big Weird Al fan. Everybody knows that. But I'm more of a fan of his original stuff. His parodies are great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, God love, he is the master and the king, you know, four and a half generations.
Yeah, he made it. I mean, he made most a whole genre of music that, you know, nobody else was.
Parody acts come and go quick. Come and go quick. He does it well. He does an album, and then he waits 3, 4, sometimes 5 years and puts out another album.
Right.
And you're like, oh, the guy's back.
Right.
But I'm a huge fan of of his originals. Like, I think it's more creative with the stuff he comes up with. And, yeah, I've, you know, people say, what's your favorite Weird Al parody? I don't have one. You know, I think they're clever. And I think there's a lot of, you know, genius behind it. But I think his original work really shows where he shines.
Where's he from originally?
Linwood, California.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I thought he was a back east fella.
No.
I don't know why I thought he was from back east. Huh.
Yeah.
Huh. What about Gallagher? For some reason, to me, Gallagher is like the comic, what would it be, the equal to Weird Al or something. You know what I mean? He's like in that kind of vein.
Here's my Gallagher story. I worked at Knott's Berry Farm.
Uh-huh.
And was working as one of the ushers at the Good Time Theater. And he was doing a show there. He was there for a month.
Really? Smashing Pumpkins every day?
Yeah. He was watermelons, John.
Oh,
watermelons.
Yeah, that's right. Smashing Pumpkins. See, that's what they should have done, a gag together.
And he was there for a month. And he did 2-3 shows a day. And one night when I was there, and the sweepers were up there cleaning up after him, I went up to shake his hand.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, hey, I'm a really big fan. Nice to meet you. And I put my hand out, and he goes, I don't shake hands with the people that pick up garbage. And I said, well, I don't pick up garbage. I'm an usher, but that is your mess. And that's all. That was my first encounter with Gallagher. And I was like, what a dick. And then years later, now, he was hanging out at the Laugh Factory. And he came in one night, and he was critiquing some people's sets and stuff like that. And he said something. I think Harry Basil was the one who goes, hey, Gallagher, you should do this guy's radio show. It's really good. A lot of my guys go on it. And he was like, I've never heard of you. And I go, well, most of my audience probably hasn't heard of you either.
Ouch.
And he just looked at me and I go, did that sting a little bit? And he goes, a little bit. And I go, let me tell you a story. And I told him what he said to me back at Knott's Berry
Farm. God bless you, having a balls to stand up. Yeah, dude, that's hilarious.
Yeah. So that was great. Yeah.
That's funny. What did he say when you told him the story?
He apologized.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he apologized.
Wow, well, that's an honorable thing.
And
let's
I'd like
go.
To point
that
out
he,
that he
that's
still
nice.
Has not done my show.
Oh, the poor guy. At one time, I heard he was pretty down and out there for a bit. I don't know if we had a...
You do what you do. You live the life you live.
Yeah. When you talk about I don't touch garbage, I heard the poor guy was sleeping on the street at one point in his hand or something like that.
I heard rumors that he's had three heart attacks and he doesn't do the mallet anymore because he's afraid that he's going to have a heart attack on stage. So he gave all of his money to his kids
because
he wanted them to live comfortably.
Right.
But I don't know if it's true.
Huh.
Again.
Yes. Well, if he did, the rotten bastard kids leave the old man sleeping in a van in Vegas on a side street somewhere. Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, for me, knowing accounting work and stuff, I've seen people with a lot of money run through it, and it's like, holy moly. I mean, how in my little place that you've been at, I mean, you know, $50 a month for 10 years for the land and about $6,000-$7,000 just for the building, you know, I mean – you know, that was 30-some years ago, and I thank God I got a place I can go if nothing else. You know, they say, what are we going to do with Pops? We'll move them out to the mountain, you know, get them the hell out of here. At least I got a place to go with a fireplace.
All right, so I have my my all-time favorite Weird Al song ready to go.
All right, very cool. Let's hear some Weird Al.
It does fall back on the very first album my parents ever got me for Christmas.
Oh, nice.
In 3D, this is the album with Eat It on it. this would actually be the second song on the vinyl, for those of you keeping track at home. An original song, and it's based on those tabloids like the Weekly World News.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, The Sun.
That was the stuff we read as kids, right?
Like Bad Boy Escapes, you know, and all that stuff. So this is an original song called Midnight Star.
All right, very good.
I wanna know
So that's a fun little song.
Weird Al. He's, now, have you seen him live?
Oh, yeah, more than any other performer ever in the history of me going to concerts.
Oh, okay. So tell me a little bit about his stage presence. How many instruments does he play? How does he work?
He plays any key instrument. So he'll play accordion, keyboard. That's it. If you see him playing guitar, he's faking it.
Really?
Yeah, because he doesn't know it. And he's openly admitted that. Even if you're not a Weird Al fan, it is positively one of the best shows you'll ever see.
Really? Wow. Very
costume
cool.
Changes, video things, and just...
I'm going to make a point. Because of what you're saying, I'm going to make a point to see him. I'm definitely going to do that.
He's definitely one of the best performers to see live.
Now, let me ask you, because you've talked about Rusty Warren in the past to me privately, and if you had a relationship knowing her personally, and she's old school. I mean, my gosh, you know? I mean, she's old enough to be my mother. I mean, really. I mean, she's... She's probably, what, 85 or something?
Yep,
like that?
She's up there.
Yeah, and I mean, what a body of work.
Hey, I'll tell you what a body of work, you know,
that she's been.
This is a little her.
All right, cool.
Again, first time I ever heard Rusty Warren or the song Bounce Your Boobies was Dr. Demento. He was like the key to everything.
Wow.
Yeah, and this was the only song I'd ever heard, like, was Bounce Your Boobies. I didn't know much about her. But I knew the song was funny, and I came to when I came to Vegas on vacation with some friends. I was still in college and stuff. The old Odyssey Records that used to be on Tropicana. We were in there frequently, just visiting it, and I had seen a Rusty Warren 2-album collection on one CD.
Wow!
So I was like, oh, this is interesting. Because I didn't know much about her at that point. So I contacted them when I got home in California and was like, hey, I'm a college student. I do a show about comedy and stuff. And I noticed that you put out a collection of some of Rusty's stuff. And so they said we'll send you a copy, and would you like to do a phone interview with her? And I was blown away because I thought she was already gone.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, she's alive. They're like, yeah, she lives in Hawaii. Whatever, we'll set it up. So I did about a couple of weeks later. I did a 10-minute phone interview with her, and. She loved it. She said, oh, this is great. You know, she goes, a guy your age should not know who I am. And I said, that's probably true, but thanks to people like Dr. Demento, I know who you are.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And then it was maybe 6 or 7 months after that, I got a call from her, and she said, I'm visiting some friends in Redondo Beach. And I would really like to meet
Who's she meeting? Joey Bishop and Rodney?
No, she's just her friend that she lives out there. But she just said, I'd like to meet you because I was really blown away by your interview. Maybe we can do a better one in studio.
Wow.
And I said, cool, I would love that. So I went, I picked her up and gave her a bunch of flowers, and we were going to go to lunch. And then we did the interview, and I'd set up all of her albums. At that point, I had all of her albums, and I knew everything about her. And I set up the albums in the studio. And she came in. She came in and sat down, and this was like memory. Bam, 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 bam. She could just fire things off by looking at an album. She knew the photographer that did the album cover, and she knew this. And the one thing that I asked her in that interview that blew me away was, I said, you had a lot of press back in the day, but is there one time where... There was an art, and I didn't know, I had no idea this answer. And I was like, was there ever a time when somebody said something that hurt you? She fired it off. She knew his name, what newspaper it was. And she was like, I feel so bad, blah, blah, blah. And she just, you know, knew it. And she said it was the only bad article that I ever received.
And she remembered.
And it had an impact on her. And it was big. So then, I was putting together, this was right just before I was getting ready to move to Vegas. I was always do charity stuff. You know that. I just did it for the Pioneer Saloon and the homeless and all this. we were putting together a show at the Improv to raise toys for the underprivileged children of this place called Orangewood. And so we were having this big charity show with all these people that had done the show. And prior to me meeting Rusty Warren, I did an interview with Shelley Berman.
Well, my question was going to be is, what did Rusty talk about the people that she hung with? Because, I mean, she's my parents' generation. I mean, she knew everybody she had to.
She has the coolest stories. She has the coolest stories about Phyllis Diller and Joan Rivers. Her neighbor in Hawaii used to be Roseanne. I mean, just like unbelievable. You can talk to this lady for hours.
Hours. I know. I'd love to.
So we did. So I was putting this charity. I was putting this charity show together, and Shelley Berman decided that's Alan Sherman.
Oh, Shelley Berman.
So and we'll Alan Sherman long gone before I started listening to Dr. Demento. So we were putting this charity show together, and he agreed to do it. And then Rusty kind of found out about it. And she goes, well, you didn't ask me to do it. And I'm like, well, you live in Hawaii. That's kind of a, you know, different thing. And she goes, if you asked me to do it, I'd probably do it. And I said, would you do it? She goes, if the improv puts me up, I'll do it. I called the improv and I said, what if I... And now she has been retired since 1989. Wow. She had not been on a comedy stage since 1989.
Wow.
And I called the improv and I said, Rusty said she would do the event. They're like, you're telling me that you can get Rusty Warren? And I said, yeah. She said she would That's do it if you guys feeling. If you guys put her up and paid for her hotel, she'll come out.
Yeah.
And they said, that's fantastic. And... apparently, Shelley Berman had an issue with that because Shelley Berman apparently didn't like her back in the day, and I didn't know this. And he'd found out, and he canceled. He canceled, and I was going to give him. We had these little awards. Crazy J Show used to do these awards.
He had a problem with her, and he canceled out of a charity show.
Yeah, I'm getting to that. He said I'm not going to perform, whatever. And I was going to just send him the award that we had made for him,
right?
And so he said he wasn't going to do it. So I called the improv and I said, well, Shelley Berman's canceled. And they're like, that's okay. You've sold more tickets because Rusty's coming than Shelley. So don't worry about it. I said, all right, not a problem. No big deal. So we picked her up at the airport, took her to her room. The next night, she came over to my parents' house. My mom was going to cook dinner, which she's never, ever, ever forgotten. Wow. She thought that was the coolest thing. She goes, I hope you're not expecting me to do any time. I haven't done time in years. I go, I just want you to go up on stage. I want you just to say a few words and take your award from me and sit down. You don't have to do anything at all. So I put this little montage video together of her life, and I told the crowd, we were sold out. We were sold out, like 300 seats. And I said, the only woman that deserves a standing ovation tonight is Rusty Warren. She flew all the way in from Hawaii to be here. So everybody stood up. She's walking up. She doesn't have the red hair anymore. She's got gray hair, blah, blah, blah. And she walks up on stage and she said, wow, I was a looker back then. And everybody started laughing. And here's a woman that never cussed on any of her albums. I think Goddamn was probably the strongest thing that she ever said. But the innuendos were there, which is why she was considered a dirty comic.
Right, right, right.
And so she, you know, never cussed, never said anything like that at all. And then she started talking to the crowd. She's like, wow, you know, things have changed since my time. You know, and she said there's a line. I have it recorded somewhere. I gotta pull it up. But she said, back in my day, it was, you know, you could just simply say, hello, how are you? Want to fuck? And I get on the microphone and I'm like, Rusty Warren just said fuck on my show. And she laughed and turned and looked at me and she said, well, it's easy to say it when you ain't getting it. She went in, literally, I'm not kidding, John, 15 minutes of the difference of having sex then and what you have to do to have sex now. And it was the most hysterical 15 minutes, and she didn't plan it.
Wow.
Didn't plan it, didn't have anything prepared.
No, that's it.
And it just came, and then she walked upstage. She walked upstage. We gave her the Crazy J Funniest Lady in Comedy Award, whatever. And she signed autographs until no more people wanted autographs.
Oh, you warmed her heart, man. I mean, she'd been retired since 89.
89. And since then, the improv, the Laugh Factory in Scottsdale has given her a lifetime thing. We went and seen her out there.
Yeah, that was just, 2 years ago, I think. A year ago?
A little over a year ago. Yeah. And just recently, the Burlesque Hall of Fame here in Vegas entered her into it.
Really?
So she was out here to get an award. And, I mean, it...
And you saw her then, too?
Oh, I see her every time.
Excellent.
I've been, you know...
When did you do the show down in L.A.? Or, you know, whatever.
That was 2000. That was just before I moved here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was end of 99, early 2000.
You had a long relationship with her now.
We left. I picked her up the next day to take her to the airport, drive her to LAX.
Wow.
And that is what she had told me, that she was very concerned about her past not being around when she goes away. She didn't really have anybody to give it to or anything like that. And she said that when she went back to Hawaii, she was going to talk to her attorneys and leave me the rights to her stuff.
Now, was something like that, if that comes to fruition...
It is 100%.
It's almost like that Comedy Hall of Fame... It was in Florida. Man, I'd love to see. I don't know why there's not a Comedy Hall of Fame somewhere in this country. There's one in Florida, and they were actually looking for some funding and a place to reside. And I contacted them. They said, oh, my gosh, if we could be set up in Las Vegas, we'd move there in a heartbeat if there's a funding.
I have access to her original works, so if anybody wanted to do a movie about her, I'm in control of her likeness.
Wow.
Any of that stuff.
Wow.
And, It's pretty awesome. When my mom passed away and she'd found out about it.
When did you lose your mom, Jim?
It'll be 9 years in August.
Oh wow!
And she still remembers.
How unique!
Not just meeting her, but just my mom making her feel like when she made my mom made her feel like part of the family. We didn't sit there and oogle like she but she sat back and told us about going to Elvis's wedding, getting high with the Beatles, you know, all this stuff.
Oh my gosh, Jay.
Unbelievable stuff. And So I have the rights to her stuff
and
she's still going. I call her just about.
Has she ever done a book on her life?
There is a book coming out. I'm supposed to be writing the foreword when they tell me to go ahead and do it.
Right.
To write a little something about her. And all that. So yeah, that's probably my biggest claim to fame.
Wow.
On a whim, just thought. And the thing of it is, Bounce Your Boobies was the funniest song I'd ever heard.
And it's such a different generation. You're grandchild to her. You know, I mean, your age group. I mean, I could be 63, child.
The great thing about it, she's on Facebook. She talks to people, the fans that are discovering her.
How
now
old is she today now?
She's in her 80s. She's mid-80s.
Mid-80s? I would think she'd be even older than that.
Trust me, John. She's in her mid-80s. Yeah.
I mean, 85 years old. It's like my mom, man. She's 25 years old. She's 87 this year, I guess. And,
but
you know, they went through World War II and everything. You know what I mean? They're the generation that saw America go from, what were we back then? Maybe 250 million people. And today, now we're 340 million people. I mean, it's just amazing everything that they went through and saw.
She lives in Laguna. And she's about two blocks from my sister's house. So,
Rusty is today?
Yes.
When did she leave Hawaii?
A little over a year ago.
Oh, really? Yeah. No kidding. Is she going out in the scene at all, or is she around family, or has she got anything?
Just friends.
Nice.
Yeah.
That is very cool. Man, I'd love to sit and listen to her stories.
She is unbelievable.
You know? That stuff's got to be recorded, whatever you do, you know? I mean, that's just amazing. Because you can talk about the old-timers and stuff like that. I mean, that's just amazing. I mean, because and Vegas and stuff, everything changed so much. I mean, back in the day, it was a whole different kind of vibe. I mean, you know how it was. And now everything's gone corporate and everything. But, hey, it's been a great show tonight. I really appreciate that we were able to sit here and talk this evening. I like the idea that for as many years that I've known you that we've been able to do this, and it's given me the idea. I think next week I just want to interview Bernie. I want to mention, before we get out of here, I want to mention a good friend of mine over at Century 21 Solutions. If you're looking to buy or sell your home and you want an honest, hardworking realtor to help you, give Michael Hallop a call at Century 21 Solutions, 702-533-4238. Get a hold of Mike Hallop, Century 21 Solutions. Remember, OscarandBernie.com. We got a website, Oscar and Bernie, your YouTube channel. Check us out over there. See my friends at Amnesia Salon over on Losey Road. Say hi to Ernie over there. And get a hold of Pete's Wheatgrass. If you want to be drinking some healthy stuff here in town, you want to get a hold of Pete's. So anyways, Jay, thank you very much for this interview. Thank you, Jay, for everything that you've done for the comedy scene here in town. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be able to do these interviews and Oscar and Bernie with Ernie History of Comedy Hour. Definitely appreciate all your production work and all your help and your friendship, too, besides. And we got a plan for a spring party after tax season up at the cabin again. Get everybody up there. Jay knows a lot of great musicians here in town, and we've had a couple parties up there on my land. It's been a lot of fun.
I just want to point out that your boy Mikey,
yeah,
said this is your best interview ever, and I'm going to have to agree.
Well, wait till next week, gang, because we're going to interview Bernie, and that is going to be a notch above now that we've set a high bar.
You said I could pick a song to end the show with.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick a song that I don't play for too many people.
Oh, okay, cool.
Back in the day, when I was in doing all the Dr. Demento stuff, I had people go, why do you call yourself Crazy Jay? Nothing crazy. You never did anything crazy. And I didn't. And I hung out with a band. I used to go around and hang out with them and stuff. And they talked me into doing a cover of a novelty song. And the original novelty song is a guy named Jesse Lee Turner, and the song's called Little Space Girl. And it's kind of based on, like, a Little Blue Man. It was also based on, like, Purple People Eater, except for, you know, she comes down to Earth, and she, like, falls in love with him. But he's like, it's not going to work because you have four arms and two lips and all that. And it's a very funny song. The original sounds like this. Here's a little bit of it. So you might remember it.
I was strolling through the park one night, and oh, I felt so blue, when I heard a little voice say, I'm so lonely too.
So, so they talked me into doing a cover of that song.
You're singing this?
I'm singing it. I'm doing both parts. I'm doing the man part and the alien part.
All right.
So
we're going out with this.
Yeah, so we'll wrap up with my version of Little Space Girl.
I hope you gotta pay royalties for this.
Here it is.
I was strolling through the park one night, and oh, I felt so blue, when I heard a little voice say, I want more. Then I turned around to look, and to my surprise, we
said, this thing gone far enough. I had enough of this. She said, but when I finish kissing her, I had this to say. 'Cause you got four arms, three lips, three eyes. Why, sure.